From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. The concept is simple. The guest chooses the theme, the coin is flipped, and the winner is the first to tell a story based on their chosen theme. The loser gets to share a second. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. There is no end to the game. There's no end at all. You just keep going and going. Have you bought any of the expansion packs yet?
Yes.
Me too. I've got
all of that.
I've got both of them.
Yeah, me too.
I was a little
surprised.
That's
why I went back and decided I was going to beat everybody with only fists. That's been my latest adventure.
How's that going?
Very slow.
Very slow. Dragons, not easy to beat with your fist.
No. Yes. No, I've never actually tried that. What I've started doing is, anyway, we're recording, so let me explain really quick.
Okay.
We're talking about Skyrim, which is oddly addicting because
Absolutely. There's
no... Honestly, even if you follow the central storyline, you can still just get lost along the way. There's so many... There's hundreds of hours of side missions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what I did the first time through was try and hit all of the major trades. So, you know, thief, assassin, dragonborn, etc., until I hit level 50. And this was back before they had fixed it. So you'd get to play for about 3 minutes, and it would reset.
Ugh.
You had to boot you out to desktop. And I was trying to liberate Skyrim at the time. It was very frustrating.
So I'm playing on an Xbox, so I haven't had any of that misfortune, but I also don't get the benefit of cheats, so
. I haven't cheated per se, but I have downloaded packages of weapons and different armors and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool. I'm doing all kinds of stupid, cheesy things, like where you can sneak up, you hide behind the graybeards, and then stab them with daggers, and they for some reason don't notice, but you level your sneaking up to the 100, like, in like 10 minutes.
Do they not die?
They don't. They just make grunty noises and bleed. That's
ow.
All
that happens. Ow. All right.
Stop it.
Yes. I have dialed the handsome and intelligent Ix, whom has been talked about by three of our guests so far.
Oh, dear.
That would be Ethan, Damien, and Everett.
Yes.
You may recall
them. And you don't have to call me that, you know.
What do I call
you? You are exempt. You are allowed to call me whatever you feel like calling me.
All right, toots.
There we go.
Well, I knew you before the name change. Before we get started on whatever the hell we're going to talk about, why did you change? What was the impetus of you saying, Nate's a dumb name, I don't like it anymore?
No. I have no problem with the name. Generally the way I like to tell the story is, so I worked at Pablo's downtown.
The coffee shop.
The coffee shop, yes,
in the
performing arts complex.
Sure, right? The snooty coffee shop that you guys fucking loved and I could not stand.
Yeah, no, totally understandable.
Yeah.
I loved it because they made me a manager, which no one had ever determined that I might be worth that. And then I promptly got fired. But I got fired for doing exactly what they told me to do, so... That was good. But in any case, when I worked there, that was not that far from the courthouse where they did name changes,
yeah.
Of course. And I found that out. And one day I had a long lunch break. So I just wrote down a bunch of potential name ideas on a piece of paper and then went over there and changed my name.
Yeah, what did it cost?
It was only $40. It's much more expensive now, but yeah. the other thing that happened is technically you're supposed to have to take out ads in the paper and do all this kind of notification business. But the judge apparently thought it was really hilarious because he just signed everything and stamped it. So it was finished without me having to do anything else. So it's probably not really accurate.
Why are you changing your name, son? Long lunch break, kind of bored.
You have to write a reason in on the form.
Yeah.
And the clerk told me you can write anything you want. You could write running from the law. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you write. So I wrote Henry David Thoreau.
That's good.
I think that's why the judge laughed. Honestly.
That would have made me laugh. That would have made me laugh. Okay. What topic have you picked for this evening's conversation, sir?
Man, it's been a tough one. Because I've been waffling between
boobs.
Obviously. Yes. But actually screenplays.
Oh my God. And Fruit Loops.
And the writing thereof. And maybe selling out.
I like selling out because it's a theme we can run with. But I want to, if I can, I was watching At Midnight, Chris Hardwick's new show on Comedy Central. Uh-huh. And I believe this was last night's show, and they were making a joke about the 420 in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
And how they showed I guess it's a rally. It's not a protest because everybody seemed pretty fucking happy. But there was a... Anyway, it was this huge, huge white cloud over Civic Center Park. Yeah. And they made fun of it. And one of the jokes was Fruit Loops outsells fruit or some such. And what I remembered was when you and I were working on that idiot screenplay on my old compact portable.
Fantastic computer.
The suitcase sized, which I still have, by the way. I don't know if it runs or not. It's over at a buddy's house in his closet. He won't give it back because he says he's going to sell it on eBay and retire. But I would make you go to the store and get me giant bags of Malto Meal generic Fruit Loops.
Yes.
Because I love them.
I do remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, you also had let me tell you something. The day the doctor said I had type 2 diabetes, I was not surprised.
He said, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, what took so long? Do you have any idea? Do you remember at all what the hell our screenplay was about?
Vaguely. So we were trying to write, if I remember this correctly, and I might be wrong, we were trying to write a... raunchy, dirty detective comedy based on Coriolanus.
That's true. That is true. All of that just triggered responses in my memory.
And that's not a simple task.
No, it wasn't.
Say.
Because I was, as I recall, now this was on 13th Ave, right?
Yeah.
And I was in a basement
apartment.
You were
living there with Tracy, I believe?
Maybe. She might have lived there.
I think she lived there at the time.
I think that's why I moved in. I don't remember who. There were people there. There was like one dude in a room I don't even remember talking to. I probably did. But he had snakes, lots and lots of snakes. and because I've decided I'm never going to run for office, I can at least share this part. So I was sleeping on the floor in the living room over in a corner next to the table where I had set up the computer. I was there. It was after I had sold myself into slavery to the lesbian who bought me for LSD.
Right. A bargain.
Yeah. And then remembered she was a lesbian and kicked me out. And this is where I ended up. Because I had been living with little redheaded Carrie just down the street next to Lickety Split. And this is where I ended up. And so one night... And I think you were there for this, but you may not have been. The power went out, and it was raining. I mean, it was just pissing rain like I have never seen in Denver before. And one thing led to another, and suddenly there were about 11 naked people running up and down 13th.
I think I do remember that.
And one of them was Tracy's boyfriend, who had... oh, how do I put this? A very Michael Fassbender, like Gigantor size. This knee swinging, you know, meat stick. And we were all like, yeah, let's go run around naked. Yay, this will be fun. And off come the clothes. And the next thing you know, off come his pants. And we're all like, oh
never mind.
Yeah, maybe running around in the cold, cold rain is not a really good idea because douche. And yeah.
That's right. Didn't we also go upstairs? You had a neighbor, the like person who lived above you, some woman who was... if I remember correctly, attractive.
Oh yeah, she was never knocked down, drag out, yeah. And she drank a lot of marijuana tea.
Oh really? I didn't.
And one of the things that made me sad about her is, and I think you might recall this, I can't stand stoners. I don't. I don't like pot. I don't like stoners. I don't like stoned people. I can barely handle drunk people, and honestly, at this age, I don't even handle that very well. And so I had met her when I first moved in and was just like, yes, this shall be mine. And then the next time I saw her, she was just baked out of her mind. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, never mind. But I did. I used to drag my friends upstairs from time to time to introduce them to the hot girl whose name I can't remember. But my brain says was Wendy. I think I'm wrong, though.
Sounds close. That sounds close-ish.
Wendis.
Yeah, something like that.
With a W?
My memories. I've heard you speak several times now about how your memories are spotty.
Yeah,
lots of holes.
Yeah,
mine are too, and I don't have anything to blame for that one, so I'm not really sure.
Well, other shit happens and takes file space in the front.
That's right. Well, and I get these weird, out of place memories I have no context for. Like, for example, I think one of the first times I ever went to your house, you were living with Joe.
Yeah.
And I think maybe about 20 other people in a one-bedroom apartment. I went in and there were sleeping bags all over the place. It was late at night. Okay. There was people sleeping. There were people sleeping on every square foot.
It was not my place. It was this kid named Andrew, and he was a bass player who had a serious fetish for Bruce Springsteen and LSD. And Andrew was a really sweet kid, really, really nice guy. And he had this girlfriend who didn't like any of us. But what had happened was we had a bass player at the time for the band we were playing in, which I don't know if you remember the name or not, but I believe at that time we were operating as Even Further, named yes. after Ken Kesey's bus.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. And we lost our bass player. He had ingested some illegal substance or another, and had perhaps unintentionally been left behind at a bar in Thornton, Colorado. So
maybe not the only person.
Yeah, the thing was he was one of the two cars that drove. So, and it wasn't me that stole his car. I can say that very proudly. So he quit, and we had a gig at, if I recall this correctly, I think it was it Okoboji's?
Oh,
before, right before the IRS took it away from the owners. Oh, and nobody knew this was happening, and so we were really excited because they were doing the live nationwide satellite feeds when we booked the gig. I think it was about 2 months prior to doing it. And this was it. This was finally one of those gigs that you just try and try and try and get, and we got it, and then we abandoned our bass player and stole his car in one of the worst towns in Colorado.
Oh man!
So we got Andy, and somehow or another, I don't recall the circumstances quite precisely, but it was right after Joey and I left the apartment on 13th Ave, and before we moved into the one on 17th, up by City Park, and it was me, Mike, Joey, Andy's girlfriend, one of Mike's weird girlfriends, I think somebody I was bopping as well, and we all just went into his studio apartment and dropped off all of our band equipment and sleeping bags and just stayed there for like 3 weeks until his girlfriend got pissed about it and he quit the band and kicked us out, which he had every right in the world to do.
Yeah, yeah, that was not a nice environment.
No, and I have been, you know, I've been involved in bad behavior and been upset with the way people have dealt with it before. The truth was is I had no idea why he hadn't done it at least 2 weeks sooner. We were Joey and I were both working. We just didn't have anywhere to stay because we couldn't find a place to rent.
Yeah.
And it was coming on to Christmas. In fact, we were there over Christmas, as I recall. It was awful.
Didn't you move in? Yeah, so did you say that already? You moved into the 13th and Ogden apartment after that?
No, that was in between 13th and Ogden and our 17th and
okay.
Gaylord.
And Larry I. Murray lived in that building at the same time as you.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
Remember him? Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. I ended up dating a girl a couple of years later that lived in that same studio apartment.
Oh, really?
Which was really creepy. She was from Atlanta, Georgia. Didn't much kin cotton to foreplay, oddly. Which you would think would be a cool thing, but I'm actually quite fond of it. So she was weird. We didn't get along very well. And then she fed me Mexican food and could not believe that a man with my, let's call it, knee-jerk or habitual reaction of anger and violence to things that upset me couldn't eat hot sauce.
Oh.
And so she took me to some place down off the hill and fed me this burrito that was honestly one of the most delicious things I've ever had, but was also just chock full of all sorts of different kinds of peppers. And she learned what happens when you give a guy with the genetic background of the Scottish Highlands lots of different kinds of spicy peppers, and just how loud and trumpety flatulence can get. And yet dated me for at least another month. At least.
What fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, so sell out. Selling out.
Sure.
Selling out. Because I think we did exhaust the screenplay.
I think so. I think we covered as much as needs to be covered of the screenplay.
All right, so hang on just a second. Ix-Nate, tell me a story. To have to do a thing. It's a thing I do here.
I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. It's good. I'm into it. All right. So this is an interesting one because there's a few different angles on this one, but I'm actually choosing to tell you a story that you happened to me after you had already left.
All right.
Left Colorado. I was still working in a coffee shop because it had been many years of me working in a coffee shop.
Now, was this... I came back and left a couple of times. Was this, like, 94, or was this later before I left in 98?
I came back and left several times myself.
Yeah.
So, because I moved to Austin, then moved back to Denver.
I remember
then
that.
Then moved to Chicago for school.
That.
And then moved back to Denver.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Austin again. And then I moved back to Denver. And then I moved to Seattle, and then I moved back to Denver. You can see a pattern here. And then back to Austin again. So, yes, this was somewhere in that mix. But actually, this was after I had moved. I moved to Austin one of these times. Mm-hmm. I'll actually back up a little bit. This starts, maybe. This is a stretch. But this starts when I was living in Denver. And I was living in the same building that Richard Vincent lived in. Remember Richard Vincent?
No.
Richard Vincent was an old, tiny man who painted. He did abstract expressionist paintings, smoked like a chimney, and walked everywhere he went. He lived in these art studios on Colfax and Logan, maybe?
I remember those.
Yeah, they were dumpy, terrible places, right?
So, yeah, so he lived there. He was always at Paris. He was always at Muddy's. I'm actually surprised you don't remember him. But
I'll bet if I saw a picture, I would.
Yeah, he had a glass eye.
I remember Richard Vincent.
You remember Richard? All right.
It always takes a trigger.
Richard was a cranky, difficult person, but also absolutely brilliant artist. And he was actually helping me kind of develop my painting. But I reached a point in my life where I was extremely poor. So I ended up moving into the building where they were, his art studio was. And
yeah.
In the policy, you're not supposed to live there.
Oh, of course
I couldn't
not.
Even actually afford the room. And so I split it with Ken, Ken Walters. So his half was full of Halloween supplies. And then my half was for painting, and I had a futon. There was a bathroom downstairs. I had the great experience of having the shower. There was a shower, but the shower had a door that went into literally into the shower stall. But on the other side of the door was some guy's photo darkroom. So it happened to me a couple of times that I'd be taking a shower, and all of a sudden the door would open, and the guy would say, "Hey, I'm trying to develop some things. Can you hurry up and get out of the shower?" Very uncomfortable experience. So this was sort of rock bottom for me, right? This was going off to art school. I had no money, and I had started to come to that realization I think many people reach, which is that art is not a path that's going to lead me to any kind of income.
At the very
going down
least,
the path of being an artist
dead.
Means I'm going to be a barista.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what that meant for me. And I started to realize that. I then went off to school, and you know, one thing led to another. I ended up later back in Austin and misguided, but trying desperately to avoid that situation again. To add to this, I had
the photographer interrupting your shower to stare at your penis.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Yes. Where I could afford $60 a month, but just barely. Mm-hmm. In Austin. Now to add to this mentality, I had met Allison, and we had known each other for about 2 months when we found out that she was pregnant. Hooray. It was very nerve wracking at the
rhythm
time.
Rhythm method?
What's that?
It's a rhythm method? That bastard?
I have no rhythm. That's all I'm saying. Nothing. So, so it was quite a surprise. But it definitely pushed me in that direction. And that was the point at which I realized I needed to sell out. So for me, that sellout moment was when there was a guy that used to come into the coffee shop, Tom. He decided I made a deal with him. He was a programmer. I said, if you will teach me how to write HTML and JavaScript, then I will give you free coffee. So he would write down pieces of code on napkins.
Nice
deal.
Give
that to me, and I would give him coffee.
Right. That's what I thought.
So that led to, at some point, suddenly I had crossed the barrier, and I felt like, sure, I know enough. I can do this. This is like 97, mm-hmm. maybe somewhere on there, early 97.
Okay.
I was like, sure, I could do this. So then I decided to start looking for a job. So here's the guy I pick, right? This guy comes in. I probably shouldn't say what his actual name is, but he owned a hosting company that was next door to the coffee shop I worked in. He comes in through the back door of the coffee shop
because
there are cop cars stationed in front of his office waiting to repossess all of his servers.
Right? Oh.
Yeah. And this is because he hasn't paid any of his bills because he's trying to sell the business. And so he's trying to keep the cops away long enough for the paperwork to go through so that the new owner has to deal with the repossession of all the servers.
Dick.
This is the guy I decided I'm going to go work for.
Bill Gates.
Yeah. He started a business selling high-definition TVs in 1997. Maybe
Crazy Al.
Yeah, right. Crazy Al with some connections in Japan. I go work for him. I start making his website. He asked me to write his all of his requests for funding. So I ended up writing all of his proposals. We ended up getting several hundred thousand dollars in investment.
Nice.
And in the course of 6 months, he blew all of it on strippers and weed. He bought.
How do you buy that much weed? He must have been spending a lot on strippers because
it was like a couch-sized barrel of weed. It was like a a big, huge bale of weed that he bought.
Wow.
And then several strippers, and they were there in the office all the time. So it was me and this guy blowing all of the money. Right up to the point when Allison was about to have a baby, and he came to my door in the middle of the night, told me that he had run out of money and couldn't pay me my paycheck. So I was
Did
looking
you work
forward
in the office
this.
Or were you working remote?
I was working in the office, so he waited until the end of the day on a Friday when he was supposed to be bringing my paycheck.
So you didn't get to hang out with the strippers?
No. They were all in the office for months. This is a few months later.
Yeah.
But the reason I was looking forward to telling you this story is because I know how you have characterized me over the years.
What?
And so yeah. So I thought that I would.
As adorable.
I would let you know that this
a little a little luckless.
well, more than that, I got angry, which doesn't happen.
You don't get angry very often.
No, I don't.
In fact, you've only been angry with me once, and that was when I told you I was joining the Marine Corps.
Yeah, I was mad about that.
You were very mad about that. Yeah. Hold on just a second. I got a dog trying to get in my lap. Dude, you cannot jump on me when I'm working. Say hello, then. No, you can't get on my lap. Get down. Dog weighs 60 pounds, so he's trying to jump in my lap.
So did I get – when I'm trying to think of when that was because was that before your accident when you stole
Oh, God,
me
yes.
Your, right.
Yeah. Yeah. I joined. I ended up joining. And then once you break your neck, the Marine Corps thinks that you're, you know, not good for shit. So.
Damn.
Yeah. It hurt, by the way, breaking your neck.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Because as I recall, you were with me moments before it happened.
Yeah, you did that like five blocks from my house, right?
Had I not given in to my irresistible – look, I cannot say no. I am incapable of saying no to drive-through cheeseburgers with bacon on them. And so that was – Good Times, as you might recall, was still pretty new in the area. And they had spicy
Yum.
Fries and then the bacon double cheeseburger. And I went and got a combo, and when the girl hit me, this is one of the clearest memories of that night. When the girl hit me, and my car did the spins and rolled over, I noticed I couldn't really walk, but I noticed that the bag was still upright. She had already given me her insurance information and fled the scene. And so I'm basically sitting in the middle. I think it was Monaco. Am I right?
Yeah.
It was like Monaco and 14th is where I got hit. And so I'm right there in the middle of the fucking road in this rolled over car. I have blood squirting out of my head. My wrist is broken. I don't know that there's something wrong with my neck. I just know that my legs aren't paying attention to what's going on right now. I can see that my knee is screwed up, but I couldn't feel it. So I look over and I'm like, hey, my dinner survived. And so I jam my hand in the bag and it's full of fucking glass.
Oh,
I cut
no.
the shit out of my hand and I'm just like, you know, of all the fucking indignities that I have had to suffer tonight, this is the one that makes me angry.
That reminds me of when I was following my sister in a car trip. We were in separate cars across Nebraska when she
is this the warrior princess?
Pardon me?
Is this the warrior princess?
Yes, okay. It is. Yes. And she was in front of me in her CRX, which I thought was one of the coolest cars ever. And we were going like 80 miles an hour. And she hit a tractor trailer tire in the middle of the highway.
Oh, those are
falling
fun.
Up. Huge, huge tire. But her car just suddenly launches into the air, right? And it flips end over end into the median. She flipped over like four times.
Yikes.
It took me a long time to react. Like I was like, I don't know what happened.
Look what you did with her car. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, look at that. Hmm. So, but when I go over to her, the car was totally smashed up. She's still in the driver's seat, but unconscious, and all the windows are gone and everything. And I was just really worried because her face is just like, is really dark. And I was like, oh my God, she's got glass just embedded in her whole face. Like, it's just covered in it. And I was kind of freaked out. She starts to wake up and she's delirious and starts rubbing at her face, trying to get it off. And I was like, oh God, don't do that. That's the worst thing you can do. And then I realized that it was oatmeal. And it wasn't glass at all. She had been eating oatmeal and it just splattered all over.
Who the fuck eats oatmeal in the car?
Well, her only injury from that accident, unbelievably, was a cut on her ankle from the bowl of oatmeal.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that terrible? Oh, I felt so bad.
Okay, so let me sum up.
Yes.
Your selling out was going from art to programming. But
to design. It was the art to design.
Yeah.
Painful design that you switch.
Because that's the difference, is design usually has a paycheck attached.
It's true. I think the other main difference is design is intended to be understood.
Oh, shit. Really? I can't. Because we both do that now.
Yes, we do.
But you do like GUI now, don't you? Aren't you like a user interface guy?
Actually, you might.
Or is that just the last time we talked about Word?
For our connected home solution. So that means like software, apps, embedded UI in devices and devices and cloud stuff. So It's like all those things working together. But it's just design work, just on more pieces.
Because I have had a recent sellout myself.
Have you?
Well, yeah, let's go back a few years. I was working for the Democratic National Committee.
Noble cause.
Not really. They're a bunch of fuckwits. But the pay was good and the benefits were spectacular. I will never have a benefits package that good again. You know, say what you will. Those sons of bitches put the money where their mouth was in healthcare. And I was too proud and busy to use much of it, which I regret to this day. So, I pissed off, there's so many things that happened, but let's just basically say I pissed off a congressman by taking offense at his staff saying that child abuse was a parental rights issue and that they wouldn't sign on to a piece of legislation I was actively lobbying them to sign on to. Ugh. So, and you know what? The thing is, and this is what makes me so mad, is in Utah, it kind of is looked at that way. Is no, you probably shouldn't fuck your kids. But if you do, and the Department of Child Welfare shows up, well, that's the government. Fuck them. This is something that should be taken care of in the family. You see what I mean?
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's why that rancher, that Bundy dipshit, surprises me not at all. I actually find it a non-sexy story, other than it is kind of interesting how many shitheads he dragged out there. For a guy who claims that there's no such thing as the United States of America, but rides around on his idiot fucking horse with a fucking American flag. Idiot. So, just pay your fucking taxes. I pay my taxes, dick. So, they fired
me. So, obviously an issue that you weren't too passionate about, I can tell.
Yeah, but you know how easily idiots just piss me off. So I went to work for the Salt Lake City mayor's office. The mayor at the time was a gentleman named Rocky Anderson. Rocky Anderson was a controversial mayor because he was kind of a dick. And he had a turnover in his 8 years as mayor of like almost 100 people. And somehow managed to believe, and probably still does believe, that it had nothing to do with him. Even though he was pretty much the only thing all of these people had in common. There are three people that have worked for him in that area, that era. A guy named Josh, a guy named Patrick, and me. And I believe I stayed with him. I'm the number two. I stayed with him longer than the other guy. Now, he left the mayor's office, and I followed him into private practice where he was doing advocacy work for human rights around the world. I have honestly never been able to put two and two together on how a guy who hates and treats humanity as shitty as he does could possibly be both as passionate and effective as a human rights advocate. Never made sense to me. Still can't wrap my fucking head around it. I did that for another, year and a half, and then the fund I was being paid from was Bernie Madoff. And so on Christmas Eve 2009, I got a call saying, I don't have any money for you, but would you mind working the next 3 months for free? To which I said, the fuck no, I won't. And things happened. So when you've worked for a guy that Utahns hate as much as Rocky, and you have worked for an organization like the DNC that people think is basically half political party, half, roving RV-laden abortion clinic on wheels that goes to elementary schools, etc., you know, to forcefully abort elementary age fetuses. I don't know. could not find a fucking job. Now I, with just a quick nod to my past, I've been working in basically marketing, advertising, and design since I was 7 years old. I used to, my dad carved out an area for me in the back of his advertising agency when I was a kid, because I like to hang out there. And I started building my own broadsheets and selling subscriptions to my neighbors, who were really tolerant, especially in uptight Utah, and bought a joke sheet called the Bullsheet. That's seven. Sue me. I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this since paper and glue, you know, where if you wanted to do word art, you had to build it in foam core and then shoot it with a camera that was, at the time, taller than I was.
Right.
And then that ran through the typesetter developer and then came out, and then you glued it to a piece of paper because that's how we did shit back then. So I've been in commercial design for a long time. Unlike you, who have the soul of an artist, I have the soul of an ad man, which means not much soul at all. I understand social justice issues. I support them. I give them money and time and sweat and tears. And yet I can also turn around and sell shit to people that those people don't need. That's what I do, you know. I understand human psychology. I can sell you shit you don't want.
I would go so far as to say that's why your band had success.
I would get upset with you, but that's kind of, yeah. We were doing pretty well.
But no, I'm serious. You guys, it's not that it was shit people didn't want. It was that you knew how to sell it pretty well. You got up there and you were convincing in the role that you were playing. And it was a compelling story. I remember you playing at Paris one night, and that's just a place where nobody paid any attention to who was playing. And I remember people reacting to your sales pitch of yourself. Like, it's the same deal.
Well, I didn't mean that to be insulting. You put on an outfit, and you behave as the outfit. Yeah. And back then, as Ethan likes to say, it looked like I was buttering my toast with Pearl Jam. I didn't even like Pearl Jam back then. Love them now.
But talk about what Ethan looked like back then, because I'd like to throw that one out there.
Go for it.
Oh, you knew him back then, right?
Yeah, I did.
He had the very, very long black hair and the painted fingernails and the white skin. Right?
Which made it, when I saw him again in 2008, and he came in looking like a Jewish mountain man, it was the weirdest looking thing. The fuck is this?
Well, again, in some ways, Ethan was going after, I think, what he wanted, just the same way you were, and what he wanted was really hot goth girls. And, hey, you know.
Yeah, but so did I, and I just did it in a different costume that didn't work out as well with the goth girls. More hippies than I will ever care to admit, you know.
Sorry, I totally derailed your story because I was so... I was
I don't remember where it was. No, you know, I just, it was, you know, fuck, I miss being in a band. I miss having people carry shit for me. I mean, that's really it, too. Not the girls, not the food, not the booze, but people would haul my shit back and forth to the car, and I miss that.
Can you get an intern? Isn't that what interns are for?
We called them groupies.
Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. I prefer the groupies. The groupies would also taste your penis. Interns, you're also not allowed to do that with.
That's right.
If you do, the press gets it. It's a scandal. Everybody's upset. So. Hey.
Total non sequitur, real quick.
Yeah.
You remember Jeff Dreyfuss?
Fuck yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not imagining that guy, right?
Drove an AMC Eagle.
Did he really?
Yeah.
He was
the most badass car ever.
He was short and insanely muscular.
Yes.
Right?
He looked like a Klingon.
I remember him picking me up over his head several times.
Yeah, he looked like a Klingon.
Right.
Used to, I remember there was a Halloween where he dressed up as Hitler and then went and beat up skinheads.
I remember him throwing the skinheads irony out of funny. Paris.
What's that?
I remember him throwing skinheads out of Paris.
Yep.
Like literally picking
he
them up.
He was the first guy I ever went on a skin hunt with.
Oh, really?
We were hanging out with basically the artist gang down on Sesame Street. Uh-huh. And he's like, hey, you want to go for a ride? And I'm like, huh? I barely knew him. He's like, nah, come on. We'll get in the Eagle. He really liked that fucking car. I still to this day don't know why. He's like, we'll get in the Eagle. I'm like, can I smoke in there? Yeah, okay. I didn't care. I was probably on something. So we go driving around, and we end up, it's not, what was the park? What was the blowjob park? The one that it was, if you went out in, when Jason was living with his mom and he went on the back porch, you looked.
Cheeseman
Park. Yes. Blowjob Park.
Yes.
Put your dick in a bush, you pull it out, finished. and which I never took advantage of, but it didn't stop people from telling me all about it. So. Anyway, we drove around there until we found a little gaggle of skinheads. And he's like, hey, you see the skinheads? And I said, yeah. He's like, do you like them? I said, fuck no, assholes. He's like, cool. And so he drives onto the fucking lawn toward the picnic table or whatever they were at.
Oh, no.
Drove straight at him. Does this weird ass, would have been a fishtail in a normal car that had less four-wheel drive at grip than the Eagle did. And he jumps out and just starts punching. And it's basically me in the car going, what the fuck? And five skinheads, one of which is getting pummeled half to death. Everybody's just staring at it. Like, what happened? I don't get it. Jeff is holding this guy in his left hand. And the dude is just nothing but a sack of meat at this point. And he's got his fist back, and he looks over in the car, and he's all, oh, did you not want to? And I said,
Like he's talking about getting a burger or something like that.
Oh, he's like halfway through his burger, and he's like, oh, were you not hungry? And I said, oh, okay.
Oh, man. Oh, that's the perfect context for the last time I saw him. He was working at an old folks home, sitting with people through the night that couldn't sleep.
Aw. He really was a very gentle soul in almost every direction.
Except in the skinhead direction.
Yeah, hated those guys. So I did. Yeah. Of course, I finally ended up jumping out of the car and joining him in the revelry, and we, between the two of us, beat the shit out of five skinheads, who honestly, I don't think at any point ever really understood what was going on. You know?
It was totally arbitrary.
They're just like, what the fuck is happening? And he's, you know, screaming in Klingon or whatever. Could have been English. I don't know. I was giggling.
Are skinheads gone? Did they go away? I have not seen one.
They all went up to Idaho. They went up to northern Idaho, but they are slowly trickling back. There are communities in the South. We're going to talk about this on the Left Show actually next week, but there are communities in the South that are seeing a high spike in murders related to white supremacists. One of the things is they not all of them are skinheads anymore. Now they look like the fuck cast of Duck Dynasty.
They're just ignorant bigots.
Yeah.
Without a costume.
Yeah. So, okay. So, blah, blah, blah. Bernie Madoff.
Right.
I'll take this back. I spent months trying to get a job. And one of the things I had done for years, no matter what I was doing, was grabbing little bits and pieces of political work. You know, $300 here, $500 there. And,
like websites for folks?
Oh, I know. Websites. Yeah, websites, graphics, logos, horse shit. I would also sit down and do, you know, strategy, messaging strategy, campaign strategy, which was almost always roundly ignored. And, of course, they lost. Because that's what you do when you don't listen to somebody who's been doing this since he was 7 fucking years old. So I'm like, well, you know, since I can't find a job and it's easier to find a job when you have a job, I'll go into business for myself for reals this time, you know? And so I started doing it full time. Well, what that turned into was, you know, 6 to 7 to 8 hours a day of trying to find the work, and then 6 to 7 to 8 hours a day on top of that trying to do the work you had found.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and so I was doing...
I've been there, yeah.
That was 4 years almost of doing 16 to 18 to 20-hour days.
Oh, God.
Shit money, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 a month. I let this one client just take advantage of me for years, because they were a steady $200 a month, you know? And they're like, well, we're your only really steady client, so you need to do blah. It's like, fuck, I know I do.
Oh, man.
So out of nowhere, last summer, a buddy of mine's all, hey, we're hiring where I work. Now, let's keep in mind that I'm a left-wing, bleeding heart, social justice Nazi basher, right?
Yeah.
I took a job as marketing director at a mortgage bank.
Ooh.
Now, I made several justifications to myself, even though I knew I was selling out. And the justifications were, when the real estate market went tits up because of bad loans, these guys were fine because they don't make bad loans. They do loans to people with better credit. They really do a great job looking into the backgrounds, making sure the paperwork's right. So they were almost, had the market not slowed down, it wouldn't have mattered, but they were untouched. They were liquid. They had plenty of money in the bank. They didn't have a bunch of shitty loans go horrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
My boss at the time was a very, very charismatic, very handsome, and charismatic, which, you know, and rich. Like, that fucker ever had a problem.
And well hung.
Probably. You know, great little ass, whatever. No, and I don't even mean that in an irreverent, disrespectful way. I mean, the dude was. I mean, he was a witch. And he still is, obviously. We just have new bosses now. But he made me feel almost the exact same way, and this will crack him up if he ever hears it, that people say they feel when they shake hands with Bill Clinton. Like, you are the only thing in the world that matters at all at that moment to this person.
Wow.
He was brilliant at it. And I knew the whole time, I'm just like, ugh, magnetism, I hate that. I love this guy. And, yeah, and so... suddenly, here I am. I am working for the man. And a lot of the people that work there tease me about it. They're like, you know, what the hell is a left winger doing working for a bank? I'm fucking management. I'm the man.
That's rough.
But I got to tell you, every 2 weeks I get a paycheck.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's like at least double what I was making when I was working for myself. And I have children. You have children. And they you have to feed them or the state takes them away and puts you in jail.
There are certain requirements.
Yeah. You have to put clothes on them. They fucking grow. Whatever the hell that's all about.
I've tried to stop that, but it's not working.
I know.
You just keep doing it.
Yeah. You're not allowed to feed them things that make them short. Lead paint apparently doesn't taste good like Fruit Loops. So, yeah, and suddenly it dawned on me when I was contemplating that I was giving up working for myself, doing what I wanted to do with my own thing, no matter how bad I was at finding business. And let me tell you something. There are few people. I can do the job. I do the job well. I have a certain talent for design and layout. I'm not an artist. I don't claim to be. Never have in this regard. I'm a designer. Because I'm really good at that sort of thing. I take existing elements. I can make things look the way I want them to look. I can direct your eye flow in a way that honestly fucks with your emotions and makes you think and feel the way I want you to. It's harder at a bank, by the way, because the federal government makes you put a bunch of bullshit on there that breaks up your flow. You know, here's all these. You got to put 11 license numbers and at least 180 words of disclaimer. It's like, I'm trying to get an emotional response here. Yeah, you can do that. You just have to do all this too.
You can do it in this third of the space.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And that's turned into what I've decided is a challenge. And good. I will use these destructive elements as part of the design in their legal place to also accentuate what it is I'm trying to do. But yeah, so I loved working for me and it kind of really got in my way, last November when I suddenly realized I couldn't take the day off to go see Thor 2 just because I wanted to go
really
see a movie.
Important things come up.
Yeah. And kind of in July, it had tagged when I couldn't go see Wolverine. But, you know, yes, I wanted to see it. I did see it the weekend that it opened. But, you know, it was Wolverine. I like Wolverine. I like Hugh Jackman. But I fucking love Thor and have for years. And so not being able to take a day off work and go and see it, I was like, fuck, I don't work for me anymore. You know, and it was almost as loud a negative voice in my head as the way I felt when I realized that I had gone into business for myself. I was now going out of business for myself to work for somebody else, to make somebody else money on somebody else's agenda with somebody else's ideas. And that was one of the lowest points I've ever had in my life for about 72 hours, the 3 days before I started that job. And then, of course, I got around, you know, beautiful witch boss and didn't think a thing of it until he left.
And everything sparkled and was okay.
Dude, he was fantastic. It wasn't until he left. This was just a couple of weeks ago. He went on to, you know, brighter pastures or whatever to do other stuff. And suddenly he's gone 2 days and I'm like, holy fuck, I am underpaid and overworked. What the fuck? How did this happen?
Yeah,
right. And it's been watching the people I work with slowly wake up from this wonderful dream to go, oh yeah, the world's a shithole.
So that's actually, so this leads me to my question for you.
I will answer your question.
So I told you about my sellout experience, right? I went from, and I kind of glossed over this, but I had my own business as well. Very similar experience to yours.
Mm-hmm.
Before totally selling out. but the concept of selling out to me was very much like what you described. It was financial, right? I need this reliable paycheck. But there's another piece to it, which is that when you're kind of determining your own direction and future, I feel like your goal is to try and put into place this sort of self-perpetuating mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Like you go for this $200 a month client because that's a part of this mechanism that just keeps moving forward. And the goal or success is having these things in place, having like an intelligent and thoughtful set of circumstances come together, you organize and orchestrate the whole thing so that it maintains you and moves you forward, right? And selling out is basically saying, well, I'm just going to go where someone's already done that, right? I'm going to use this other person's system because yeah. they can just keep paying me a paycheck. Yeah. But my experience is that those people don't know any better what's going on than I did. It's just that they got lucky and got the big money piece sure. in the right spot.
Sure.
Is that your experience as well?
Do you, yeah, it feels
or,
like it.
Or do you think that there's some kind of like genius behind sustainable business that has to do with great decisions instead of chance?
I have seen too many shitheads running profitable companies. Somewhere along the line, I believe that a genius had to have gotten involved to get it over the hump. And that more than likely, in most cases, that genius got fucking thrown under the bus and ran out the door.
Once sure. everything... It was someone like you coming in not to run the whole thing, right?
Yeah. You know, here, and I've thrown this out as an example on the Left Show several times, and that is when candidates are getting started, when they start getting, you know, ready to run, and they haven't fundraised yet, that's when I get the fucking call. Hey, I've got $500-$600. Can you quickly, you know, or $1,500? Can you get me a, you know, an identity package put together? I need website. I need a handbill. I need a logo. And I was desperate every fucking year, and I would do that. And then the best case that I have, and I'm going to throw some names out you probably don't recognize, but I get a call from this dude. Hey, you know, we don't have any money yet. We haven't done anything, but we need a website and a couple other things. And I'm like, okay, $1,500. I'll get you guys set up. You'll be running before Christmas. And then I think we had $100 a month as a rollover maintenance fee, update fee, and fix anything that the campaign broke, right? And so I put it all together. Now, this campaign, you know, ended up doing very well in fundraising and ended up spending almost $300,000 with an ad agency that does everything I do. And so I come in, basically pull in over the course of, you know, a few months, $2,500 to get them up rolling, to get their fundraising apparatus in place, at which point they start to bring in the money and they run to somebody else who, in most cases, not entirely on this one, because the guy already had a brand he liked. So, you know, we had a color scheme we knew about. They already had a logo and stuff like that. But just to watch these people that I have bent over backwards for, that I have built... what I would normally charge $5,000 to do for $1,500 to give them a helping hand, and how quickly, you know, I got shuffled aside or thrown aside or whatever. And that happens a lot in politics, especially in Utah Democratic politics, because I've noticed that Democrats I work for in other states, they pay their bills on time, they take care of their friends in almost exclusively every single case. Going clear back to the early 90s when I first started goofing around for candidates and found that one of the reasons I like Democrats so much is because they always paid their bills and Republicans never did. To being on the flip side of... Oh, Jeff's just the fucking he's the econ web guy, who, you know, will get you set up cheap because he's a nice guy. Or if you've already paid a web designer, you know, thousands of dollars and they haven't come through, Jeff will feel bad for you and will do it for $300 or $400.
Ugh,
and
that's the opposite of selling out. I don't know what that's.
That's why
there's
gotta
be a term
out.
For that.
That's it. Yeah. That was it, man. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, people. I'm done. And it was, I had just been hosed again, and right when this job came along. And had this happened a month earlier, I don't think without some really serious pressure from my beloved family, that I would have made the jump, that I would have shut down my business and quit doing stuff that I love to do. to go and do stuff for other people to make money off of, because I was done with that. And now I'm back doing it again. And I'm better than I was before I quit. I am really quite good at it. And it makes me sick sometimes when you can hit these guys that have been selling money for 20 years with a pretty simple, straightforward, clean design. You go, yeah, hey, I got your flyer down here. You go, and they're like, holy shit, I've never seen anything this pretty. Which in one case is like, oh, well, I'm a pretty good designer. In the other case is, holy shit, I'll bet you don't even go to museums. I'll bet you don't even go to the fucking symphony. I'll bet you think Peter Cetera is a genius because you think he's a genius and not because you're nostalgic. I'll bet you think Barry Manilow writes the songs. You guys write the songs.
Oh, but this is good, right? I mean, maybe this is a ping pong, right? Because you can unsell out. You can jump into your own business, then jump into this and get some new connections, get some new people where your rates go up, right? When you leave this and go back to self-employment.
Honest to God, what I need to do is to pull an intern out of the business department at a college and have them teach me how to do billing. My wife and I are under we've reached the conclusion that if I'm in charge of sales for the business and I'm also in charge of design and doing the work and I'm also in charge of customer relations, that I'm going to make shitty money and not have a lot of work to do. Right. And that's what I want, is I desperately wanted, just, I tried to find somebody that would work, I mean, on a significant commission, because I didn't have any savings. You know, I will give you 30% of everything I do. You know, you bring in the work, I will do the work. I'll give you 30%, not 10, not 15, like the other assholes. I'll give you 30% because I realize what an art being a sales manager is. Somebody, an account manager, there's an art and a science to it that I do not understand.
Absolutely.
And so I need someone in between until the client has gotten to know that even though I'm kind of an asshole, I have their best interests in mind and that I love them in my own weird, crazy way. Because you really have to get to know me before you realize that when I'm yelling, it's because of love. And if I say, no, that's fucking idiotic. I mean, hey, that may not be the smartest course of action, but I don't want to spend 15 minutes trying to tell you that. I just want to get through so we can get on and get the fuck back to work. So, yes.
Yeah, you know, I just recently saw some dude out there having great success with a business model that made me slap my forehead. Right? Why didn't I ever think of this? So he for $1,500 a month or $15,000 a year, he will give you a report every month and one revision or update to your website. The report will cover traffic and analytics and what needs to change, and he'll do one A/B test for you. The end.
$15,000 a year.
Yep. And so all he's doing is using this pre-existing tool that you just embed your code into their website. It lets you do automatic A/B testing and gives you data about usage. So the guy is seriously spending about 5 hours a month on each one of these people's products.
We need to talk about this when I'm not recording, because I've had an idea.
It's genius. It's pure genius.
Honestly, but I knew a guy years ago, late 90s. That we both worked at, what was it, Computer City?
Oh, yeah.
Was that the one?
CompUSA?
No, I think it was Computer City. Because CompUSA bought them and then destroyed
Circuit
them.
City.
Huh?
Circuit City.
No, Computer City.
You're kidding me. Really?
No. Yeah.
Never heard of that one.
It was in Denver. It was, do you remember the Peaberry Coffee on the south end of Colorado Boulevard?
Yeah, I worked
right
there.
Before the bridge went over I-25.
Yep. Jason Powers got me a job there.
Yeah, I worked there too.
Oh,
actually, Jason Powers got me a couple of jobs.
Yeah, I think some of the same ones.
Yeah.
Because, I worked at Lickety Split.
As did Dave Houck.
That's right. He got me the job there.
Yeah. I don't know which one of you sons of bitches got me the job there working for Vince the Ice Cream Prince.
That was a fun job, actually.
I was the delivery driver. I had a ball. I'd show up at 6. I'd pick up my ice creams. I'd drive around all the time, all day. I'd be done by noon. And
nice.
It used to drive Vince nuts because apparently the two drivers before me could stretch it out to an 8 to 10 hour a day job. I could not fuck around enough to make it last that long. I went to movies sometimes and still ended up finishing at noon or 1. You know what I mean?
Driving too fast.
You'd go to the thing, you drop off the ice cream. You go to the next place, you drop off the ice cream. And then your van's empty, you get some gas and hit a car wash. I don't know. I remember, you remember Tracy?
Yep.
Redheaded Tracy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember? Never mind.
I'm still friends with her. She's doing crazy stuff with Burning Man
now. Yeah. She had a kid.
Yes. Nutty. A very awesome kid, it seems.
Yeah. Well, most of them are.
Yes, that's true.
I used to go over to her apartment and take naps. I would go and double up my load of ice cream, which had been chilled for 48 right. hours in 40 below temperatures. And I would go and I would drop them off at the restaurants I needed to drop them off at. And it would be like 7:45 in the morning. And so I go to Tracy's and she just let me in. And I curl up on the couch for a couple hours. And then I'd go back to get more ice cream. And every single time, Vince was like, man, you are really fast. And I'm just like, I can't fuck around any more than this. My work ethic will not let me do this much more. I hated that guy. I really did. I got mugged right outside that store.
No way.
And really? He just couldn't be fucking bothered about it. You know, the cops came and he's like, Jeff, could you just get the cops somewhere else?
Oh my God.
Can't you have them meet you at your house? I got mugged in front of your store, you little pain in the ass. You
that reminds me of when Joe
happen.
That reminds me of when Joe Valentino cut his hand working at St. Mark's, and the reaction of the owners was, this is bad for insurance. Why'd you do that?
You know what? I never liked the guy that owned St. Mark's, but I have to say, in his defense, what the fuck, Joey? Nobody cuts a bagel like that, you fucking moron. You're holding it in your hand. Who does that? How is the outcome at all a fucking surprise? I'm sorry it was so bad. And then you had to go into the weird fidget machine for so long. That's all very sad to me. However, safety first, dude. Because I remember when he did it and I first saw him in that weird bionicle thing.
The rubber band.
Yeah.
On the fingernails.
And yeah. It was like,
because he cut every tendon in his yep. palm.
Right? Yep. So I came in and I saw it. I was like, wow, that must have a really good story. And I swear to God, there was a 5 count where he was trying to find some kind of fucking lie that he could tell, other than I held a bagel the wrong way and cut it with a really sharp knife.
Oh, man. Okay, right. Not the best way to cut a bagel. I'll grant you that. But still, it was not an appropriate reaction from those folks. That was not nice.
Nope.
They had zero sympathy for him.
They were like, not nice people. That dude, I can't remember his name.
Eric.
Oh, he was such a douche. And yet, I liked St. Mark's quite a bit, especially for the small amount of time that fucking ping pong table was back there.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. That was cool.
A good place to work.
And one of the few pictures I have of me with long hair, a couple of them were that are on Facebook, were taken.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
In there.
Jim was there and Tony. And, yeah.
I miss Tony.
Yeah, no doubt, right?
I want him to draw a comic book with me.
Is he too busy drawing bots and guns?
I guess. Let me be honest. I've never asked him.
Oh,
yeah. Just because... He and I had a friend in common that I may or may not have been at one point romantically involved in. And then I behaved like a 21-year-old me.
Oh.
No, a 19-year-old me. And they were very close. And I liked her a lot. I wish we could be friends now, to be completely honest about it. But I was an asshole. I didn't know any better. You know, not an excuse. None of this is an excuse. I was an asshole. But I didn't know I was being an asshole. I was completely ignorant of the fact that I was a fucking prick. As I am most days today. I don't know. I'm unaware until somebody says, hey, that was asshole-y. And I go, yeah. Huh.
How about that?
They should suck it up.
Tony's a funny guy, though, because I really liked hanging out with Tony. And then one day he said he was moving to California.
Yeah.
And the story I heard, at least, is that he bought a 250 Ninja and drove a 250 Ninja all the way to L.A. from Denver.
Well, he weighed like 140 pounds. That'd be fine.
But that's like riding a moped from Denver all the way to
no,
L.A.
No, that's like riding a really super fast, dangerous moped.
Yeah, right.
Those 50s were high torque. They got great gas mileage. They do 90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
easy, especially with only his weight.
I don't know.
Yeah. You definitely have to put a piece of foam down the front of your shorts. But no, I liked him a lot. I still do. I follow him on Facebook. We talk from time to time. He seems to have married really well. He's got kids. His wife seems to be an incredible fucking cook.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Yeah, she gets mad at me from time to time when we talk about welfare, but I don't care if you're stoned. If you're hungry and you're in America, somebody should give you a fucking sandwich. That's just me. I don't care.
Sure.
I don't care. I pay my taxes. I know full well. I have members of my family that abuse fucking welfare. And I'm like, well, if they weren't abusing welfare, they'd be trying to live in my house and eat my food. So fuck it. I'll pay my taxes.
So I'm all for it.
Anything I can do to keep them from stealing out of people's garages. I don't care. This is America. We have a social contract. Give them a sandwich. You know, and I don't know. I think that the last argument I had was it was about Florida. Florida decided to start drug testing their welfare recipients, and anybody that was found on the drugs couldn't have the welfare, didn't get their food stamps, right? And so they spent like $4.5 million to save $280,000. And they're all running around saying, success! And I'm like, no, dummy. You know how many more stoners you could have fed? With the $4.5 million you spent?
Well, it's that whole concept that people on drugs are just irresponsible or criminal, and they don't deserve to eat.
I don't get it.
Where did we get this mentality of it, you know, oh, no, you know, addiction's not an illness. It's a punishable offense.
I blame Ken Kesey.
Because he took it to the extreme?
No, because he had a lot of fun on drugs and took pictures of it.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I don't mean that in an I'm mad at Ken Kesey sort of way. But that whole crowd that was doing LSD in the 60s and fucking making a lifestyle out of it, taking pictures, shooting movies, doing Pink Floyd videos. There is nothing. There's nothing that people in suits hate more, speaking of selling out, than people not in suits having a good time. They hate to see poor people smiling. You That's watched true. Fox News not too long ago. One of their main bitches about why Americans aren't actually poor is because most of them have refrigerators. Wow.
That's always been my measure of success.
Yeah.
A refrigerator. Ooh,
the rental unit in has the required by law refrigerator. Really abusing the system. But that's just what it is it's like, let me be honest, I miss my Medicaid. Miss the hell out of it. I still had copays. I still had to pay for drugs and stuff like that. But holy shit, man, it worked. And it worked well. And it allowed me and my family, my kids were on CHIP, but it allowed us to see doctors on a basis to where I found out that, you know, type 2 diabetes was killing me. Not actually because I'm fat and I don't eat well, but because I sat at a desk for 18 hours a day for 5 years. You know, my metabolism shot. And had it not been for Medicaid, I would never have known. I wouldn't have felt I wouldn't have been able to take my dizziness in to find out if there was a problem, you know, stemming from breaking my neck and all of the traumatic brain injury I've had in my 20s. For them to do a blood test on for some completely different reason and go, oh, by the way, you're a diabetic. That's one of the reasons you feel so shitty. So,
See, I had the uninsured story of that, right? Just a couple of years ago, I ended up going in for something small, and it cascaded into something bigger.
That was your gallbladder, wasn't it?
What's that?
Wasn't it your gallbladder or your spleen?
Yeah, that was part of it. Yeah, it was gallbladder and something called Maritzi syndrome, and then I had pancreatitis a couple times. But it was 4 months in the hospital, maybe three and a half. But yeah, eating through a tube and all that with no insurance. Once again,
you're fucked. Huh?
This is why you go sell out. Another reason to sell out, right? Is because that was when I was freelance, so I had no insurance. And the total bill, you know, I've never bothered to add it up because it's in from 14 different people I owe money to, but it's probably somewhere around $650,000.
You know, that was it's a little bit more than what my broken neck cost me.
Yeah, well, with inflation, it's probably,
I paid. The insurance company paid, her insurance company that hit me paid around $140,000, and I had to pick up about $340,000 that I had paid off. I have paid that off over the years.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. My primary hospital bill was $380,000 or something like that, not including surgeons and anesthesia and everything.
That hurts, man.
They were a charity hospital, Seton, and they knocked it down to 40.
It's just still a
out
lot,
out of the
man.
Goodness of their hearts.
It's still a lot.
It's still a lot, but I can't complain.
Well, I remember because when I broke my neck, and that was the biggest injury, but when I broke my neck, you know, that came along with the shoulder, the wrist, the elbow, the hip, and the knee as well. That was in Denver General. And the one thing they said about Denver General was it's one of the best trauma wards in the United States of America, at least at that time. I don't know anymore. Hospitals are cyclical like that. Some decades they're great, and some decades just walking in to get a Band-Aid will get you killed. and so had I been shot, stabbed, hit by a train, mauled by dogs, any of that, I would have been just fine. Going in with a broken neck... I ended up spending 22 and a half hours taped to a hard-backed carrier thingy. And, you know, I am not the most well-endowed guy. I do not have a 10-inch pecker. Therefore, taped down, I don't have enough leeway to get my pecker into the bucket they gave me.
Oh,
because it had to lay sideways for me to get my bits in, but they wouldn't untape me. So I had to hold my pee for 20 some odd hours. And I still remember being delighted that I could feel that good after breaking my neck when I finally peed. And I could actually feel the shivers on the backs of my legs and the front of my calves, much like when, you know. So, yeah, and I was just like, oh, hey, good. The nerves still work-ish because it feels really good to pee. And that was a very big day for me. But, yeah, Denver General had knocked because they were also, they were a community hospital, as it were, taxpayer-funded hospital. And so they had commuted the sentence down and knocked a couple hundred thousand off the bill. And then they got bought out by an HMO a month later, but before the fiscal year had closed out, and they rescinded the discount. So I did end up having to pay it all over.
Oh, that's terrible.
14 years?
Isn't there some sort of statute of limitations or something?
Not on medical bills. And in fact, delightful. This is one of the reasons why Utah is so good. We can't even claim medical bankruptcy here.
Oh, man. So then the deal is that you're supposed to take out all the credit cards you can, pay off all the medical debt that way, and then just wait for the statute of limitations on your credit card debt?
God damn it. Where the fuck were you when I was paying these fucking bills? I don't think like this. You ever watch the stories on TV where you see that some couple of dudes have bilked old people out of billions of dollars? What? And this is, I do not know. What was their first step? How did they figure out that they could do it? Because I don't get it. I don't want to do it. I just know that my brain doesn't work like that. I'm not geared for that kind of deception. I will lie about buying comic books, no problem, to my wife. But, you know, and have several times in my life. I don't do it anymore because it was dumb. I thought that was the way a person was supposed to behave, but you know, it just turned into, yeah, sure. Did you go eat a cheeseburger when I'm supposed to be dieting? No. But turning around to an old person and stealing their pension, I don't get it. At what point does the math in your head click that you can go, here's a scheme? Oh, a scheme. I don't get schemes. Right.
I don't know either. I don't know. I've known people that had that though. I've known people that had that seed inside them. They were capable of those sorts of things. And you can tell. I'm sure you've been around those people too.
Yeah. Yeah. Not for long.
I mean, you were in politics.
You know, one of the nice things I've had, I can honestly say, is even the people that fucked me over, I was far enough away from that I wasn't involved. But anybody that I had to spend time in a campaign with, I was very careful to who I picked, you know, as far as their integrity and honesty went. I don't like covering for people when they do dipshit. I don't. If you do it and it's legitimate and you've gotten in trouble for being honest or something like that, then yeah, I'm your guy. I will be happy to help. And I'll do my best to extricate you from the ignorance of others and their reactions. But if you're a dishonest cocksucker, let me take that back, because we've decided on the left show lately that cocksuckers are heroes. Hey, anybody that would taste a penis is a hero. I don't care who you are. You know, not douchebags, because a douchebag serves a noble purpose. A colostomy leak.
Okay, that's, you know, good. That's a
if
nasty
you,
one.
If you are a colostomy bag leak that would be that way on purpose, fuck you. You don't get me. You go get one of the other assholes that has no soul and has no conscience. I got enough baggage. I got shit to do, man. I've
right.
got a lot of karma to rearrange.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to call this an end to our swap of stories for the evening.
All right. I'm sorry. This was meandering and random, and
which makes me know that you haven't listened to previous versions very much, because that's kind of what this does.
I've listened to them. Yeah,
I know you listen.
I know they
wander.
I feel like I wandered farther.
Nah, we were fine. So hang on for just an uncomfortable minute while I say goodbye to the folks that are listening, right. And then I'm going to quit recording, and then I'm going to talk to you for a minute before I go pee, because right. I believe I used up most of my being able to wait to pee that night I broke my neck. I burned off an awful lot of waiting there. Okay, so hang tight for just a minute. Hey, folks, thank you very much for listening. If you are listening to this in the week that I've released it, please remember that The Left Show and Hold 322 will be at the Nerd Store at the Valley Fair Mall for Free Comic Book Day on May the 3rd, Saturday, May the 3rd. And we would very much like you to come out, support our little itty-bitty friends and their entrepreneurial spirit, and buy some comic books. And just remember, when you run into a member of Hold 322 or The Left Show or any of your friends from the Defender Street Media group out in public, tops off, ladies. Do a good deed.
We are miners, hard rock miners. To the shaft house we must go. Oil bottles on our shoulders, we are marching to the slow. On the line, boys, on the line, boys, drill your holes and stand in line till the shift boss comes to tell you you must drill her out on time. Can't you feel the rock dust in your lungs? It'll cut down a miner when he is still young. 2 years and the silicosis takes hold, and I feel like I'm dying from mining for gold. Yes, I feel like I'm dying from mining.